Let's start the morning off with a moment of silence, and then let's do the serenity prayer. Moment of silence. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know them. So, when we left off, who's here in their first year of recovery? Many people. That is impressive. You in your first year of recovery? Okay. You in your first year. You are what I like to call, we got two categories of newcomers in here. We got the new newcomers, shiny, fresh, it's new. And then we got the used newcomers. We got the used newcomers. And for the used newcomers, it's a little more difficult. You know, we are, most of the time we're welcoming people in, welcome, welcome. Remember coming back, be welcoming me. I was here before you got here, you know, trying to summon the enthusiasm, trying to summon and really, the hardest part to get is the humility. The humility. And that is why for me it's very important that this thing I'm embarking on, it's not homework, not work at all. You know, so I like to talk about this way of life. This way of life I discovered. And it's, I have not been looking at my ticket yet, because everybody else is, you know, the spiritual folk and the rest of that. And I love it because that's this weekend, but I'm waiting on the Game of Thrones book. I'm the take me away guy. I'm the, you know, Winterfell guy. I'm that guy. I still like novels. I still like, I grew up avid reader. I go places, and I still like it. Like those kind of stories, believe in fantastical stuff, and I believe in miracles, which is what brings me to you guys this weekend. And when in this cliffhanger that we've been doing, we started off, ooh, Ralph and Charlie, what a life. Burned it to the ground. You know, then came running in for help. So admitted defeat in the first step, and then came running for help in the second step. You know, the first step is the problem, second step the solution. And what do I do with this coming to believe? And see, the deal about the second step, that coming to believe in the second step, I don't consummate the second step in the second step. I start that process, that coming to believe. So a lot of times when we talk about, you know, God everything or God is nothing, when I say that at step two, of course I don't think he's ever, I say it because I'm in a room and people say it and Charlie made it sound very convincing and persuasive. And when I first started going through the book, I said, yeah, God is everything. But it's context. It's context. Everything that we read in this book, there's context to it. And there's context to wherever it is that I'm in recovery. So when in the second step I say God is everything or he is nothing, it's only in the context of the drowning man, and here's Charlie on the shore holding his hand out, and goddamn, at that moment, Charlie Parker is everything. He's all that stands between me and going down for the third time. Charlie is everything, he's not. Yeah, you everything, dog. You know, and that's the same thing in the second step with God. God is everything or he is nothing. Then I start into this life thing. God gets to be less everything as I start on this path, particularly because, as I said in the second step, I'm blocked. So how's God going to be everything and I don't even know this power yet? So that second step process that we got on, that's the second step. It's a process, you know, and we'll consummate. I'm going to give you a sneak preview. We consummate the second step. By the time we get to step 10, it says, so for by now, sanity has returned. And that's that second, came to believe that the power greater than ourselves could restore me to sanity. Second step, we'll hear about the way for by now. That's the way down the line. So this deal, this third step, made a decision to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions, over to the care of God as I understood him, you know, and I don't understand it. That third step is, why would I do that? Why the hell would I do it? Being convinced that my life run on my will can hardly be a success. If you're convinced that running your life is successful, don't do a third step. Stop right now. I'm not a convincing guy. I'm not an arguing guy. I'm not a persuading guy. I get sponsored. I'm not the arm twister. I don't have at it. If your life is successful, running it, keep running it. Why would you not? Why would you not? I suspect if you're sitting in here with us, though, that's the first hint I have that there's something amiss in my life. And so it spends a lot of time in that. This third step deal, and a lot of time, people spend a lot of time on the third step. And the book does a lot. It sets it up. Talks about the actor, and it talks about me being in collision with other people all the time. It talks about what happens with a life lived on Ralph Weisz's terms. Well, I'm almost always in collision with you or with my fellows, with other people around me. And if you keep running into the same obstacles all the time, keep running into the same walls and the same barriers in your life all the time, over and over and over again, you might want to try something new. The third step, a lot of times you'll hear people talk about, well, I don't know what God's will is for me. How many people have ever said that before when you get to the third step? Well, the third step is not about finding out what God's will is for me. The third step is really about giving up on me. It's really about giving up on me. Now, let me put a caveat on that. One of the things that makes it easy to sit up in front of a group like this, especially when you know there are people that sit in groups like this and they parse every word and they criticize, you know, you, dude, this is my experience. This Ralph Weisz experience. I am by no means expert. I'm by no means consultant. I said that before. Don't speak for AA. And if your sponsor is says something different, you know, have at it. But in my experience and from my perspective, third step don't have a whole lot to do with discovering what God's will is for me. It was very scary at first taking that third step. And it's interesting when you read it in the book. Everybody knows that the third step, there's a third step prayer. And at the end of the third step prayer, it says something very interesting. It says, we thought long before taking this step. And I done the prayer. And I'd be like, wait a minute, my friend Jennifer from your way, Jennifer Hudson, she always says, wait a minute, I didn't think long. I've done the prayer already. Now you tell me this? You know, and you know how they say that you, a lot of times we think that when the book was written, we say it's divinely inspired. And so we think that the angels were singing and harps were playing when they were writing this book. But people wrote it. And Bill was tricky. He's tricky. There's a couple of places where he's very tricky. And he's tricky in the third step. He says, God, and when you do the third step prayer, check it out. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Have your way with me Am I ready? Offer myself to you. Why would I do that? Let's take a look at what Ralph White looked like when I first got on my knees, which was November or so, 1987. I've been here about a year, but no driver's license, no job, hadn't been employable for a while, living at his mama's house, 33 years old, didn't know where his family was living and his ex-wife didn't want to see him. No longer was looking at himself full face in the mirror for about a year when I first came in here. No dreams, no goals, no hopes, no ambitions. Likely candidate. Yeah, I think I want to turn myself in. God, I offer myself to you. Why? Because look at what a mess I've done, man. Not a question of what are you going to do. What have I done with me? What have I done with me? What an invitation when you look at it like that. You know, when sometimes people resist and have problems with this giving up on themselves and getting under new management, that's what this really amounts to. I'm getting under new management. My friend Teresa says, I'm resigning from the CEO of Teresa. I'm no longer CEO of Ralph Inc. You know, that is a failing enterprise. No, not a failing enterprise. That is a bankrupt enterprise. It has been bankrupt for a long time. It has burned to the ground. It has no infrastructure. It has no future. It has no employees. It has no nothing. It is done deal, you know, and I'm resigning from that. It's a very interesting and inviting thing. God, I offer myself to you just like this. And here's the deal. Charlie and I have both done a lot of talking about being raised in Baptist church. And I don't know if church says this. This is what Ralph hears when you go to church. What I hear when you go to join the church is, dude, you coming to us, you promise that now you are going to stop doing all the things you were doing that we disapprove of. You promise that you're going to obey the rules of this, whatever this is, this organization, whatever the rules are, you promise you agreed to do it. Whatever the rituals are, you promise you agree to abide by them. Whatever it is that you're doing that you're not supposed to be doing, you promise from this day forward to stop doing that. You promise. So you promise you, in order for you to join us, you got to come right to get right. That ain't what we say in Alcoholics Anonymous when we get on our knees in the third step. You don't have to come right to get right in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. Girls, while you still hoeing, you get on your knees. Fellas, while you still tricking, you get on your knees. Men and women, while you still embezzling, you get on your knees. While I'm still lying, while I'm still making a mess of being a parent, I get on my knees. I don't wait till I'm right at being daddy to get on my knees. I get on my knees when I'm the worst daddy there. I get on my knees before I have a key to mama's house. I get on my knees before I stop taking stuff from the job. I get on my knees while I'm still turning tricks trying to pay rent. I get on my knees while I'm still picking up hookers and talking to, and not telling my sponsor. But I still get on my knees then. I don't come right to get right in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get on my knees just like that. I bring myself to that process just like that. God, I offer myself to you. Do something with your boy. And he did. Wow. I offer myself to you. And at first it seemed like a scary proposition. What if he wants me to be something I'm not? My friend Strange used to say, what if he want to put me in a white polyester suit and have me preaching on a street corner? Then the next sentence was, shit, that'll be better than what you was doing. Why you tripping? Why you tripping? Like you had something going on anyway, you know. But how many people in here have more than one kid? How many parents have more than one? I have two daughters. I have Rain and I have River. Now, Rain is 36 years old, and Rain, when she was a kid, she wanted to go to law school. Rain is a practicing attorney. She makes me proud. She's, you know, she's the light of my life. And Rain is, that's Rain. Now, River comes after Rain. River, just as bright, just as smart, River's got an artistic bent. River wants to be an actor. River might not even. Now, as a parent, which parent do you think is the parent that makes the better parent, the one who tells River, no, I want you to be just like your sister. I want you to be Rain. You can't make no money acting. You know, would I be a good parent then, or would the good parent be the one that's very supportive of the other one? Go to all the rehearsals, pick her up for all the rehearsals, take her home from all the rehearsals, show up at all the shows, encourage her, support her, do all the fundraisers, show up. Which parent is the good parent? The one who wants to make River Rain, or the one who wants to make River River? Now, I don't know the guy. I need to bring it to some. I need something that's understandable for me. So sometimes I use metaphors. I use paradigms that are understandable to me. Now, I don't reduce God to a human level, but sometimes when I think about it, if the admirable qualities in a human father is to support his kid. I want River to be the best River. What makes me think God won't make Ralph the best Ralph? God don't want Ralph to be Charlie. Remember, when Ralph starts talking about what God wants, you can feel free to just disregard it. But this is the way that this, for me, God wants me to be the best me. He don't want me to be Charlie. He wants me to be the best me. If I find that admirable in a parent, why would I think it less than admirable in a power that I'm turning my will and my life over to? So that just made it really comforting for me. And why would I resist this turning over the will in my life? Why would I resist this turning over management of my life? You know the two entities I think on this planet that have it the best and the easiest? Babies and well-loved dogs. They don't have to do nothing. They don't have to do. They can pee wherever they want. They can pee, and people just call. They don't get mad at them. What are you doing? Just clean it up, you know. They don't have to demand to be fed. You feed them on, you know. They don't have to ask for anything when they throw up, and they can you spit up in your face, and you just, wow, that's so cute, you know. All of the things that they just get tended and cared for. And I look at that when I go into the third step under new management. This managing of my life, this mismanaging of my life has been heavy going for Ralph White. And so when I'm new, when I'm coming into this process, and when I'm getting on my knees and I'm turning myself over to this power, and I'm saying, God, I want you to do something with your boy. And I said, God, I offer myself to you to do with me, build with me, and to do with me as you will. Check this out. He's tricky. I told you he's tricky. This is the bait and switch moment in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in here tore up under the lash of alcoholism. Tore up. Charlie was talking about being in Canada. And I like being in the South, too, because I could say that. I say I was tore up. And then somebody in Canada raised their hand at the question and answer and said, what was that you said about your toe? You thought, toe? Toe up. I'm tore up. I'm tore up. I said, I'm tore up. You guys don't. Nobody here even thought twice about it. But in Canada, you have to say, I was torn apart. You can't say I was can't say I was tore up, you know. From the floor. You got to enunciate, you know. Tore up, right? Tore up. So I come in here and I get on my knees, and you would think I'm getting ready to say, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of this burden of alcoholism. Relieve me of this terrible thirst. Relieve me of this desire to drink beverage alcohol. Relieve me of this need to smoke dope. Relieve me of this terrible disease that you put on me. But it says, relieve me of the bondage of self. Hey, when did I sign up for that? What part of the game is this? Bait and switch moment in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we're gonna talk about from now on. Whole deal. Whole deal. Tore up in step one, came to step two, get to step three and find out, wait a minute. Relieve me of the bondage of self. That's what it's too much of. I was at breakfast one time with a sponsee, and she was sitting up talking. Sponsee, I want to get into these steps because I think it's so much more to me. I said, no, baby, we need so much less of you. It's too much of me. There's too much of me on me. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Ladies and gentlemen, that's when we will be entering what it is we'll be doing for the rest of the time in this process. This process of, you know, I suffer from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer, and I can reduce that in two words. You ain't got to get on the road to Damascus to go look for this power. You ain't got to go seeking all over the place. I'm going to tell you the shortcut version in this, what our steps are designed to do. You want to find the power, grow God, shrink Ralph, whole deal. That's the formula. Grow God, shrink Ralph, whole deal. The rest of this process is this ego-reducing series of exercises and activities. Reduce me as I disclose myself to him. He reveals himself to me. That's all this whole thing is. You get me out the way, you'll see what's left. You ain't got to go looking for this power. You just go reducing and erasing what's blocking the power. We don't control, we don't do the grace. So Charlie said last night, he talked about our third tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And he talked about how that tradition is, he read it from the book. And it's a broadness, and it's an open invitation. It's the most inviting part of our fellowship. Different than our program, our fellowship, you know, is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and that puts me on the team. Like to talk about that all the time. But everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the goddamn game. And this is the put me in the game, coach, step. This takes me off the sidelines. Put me in the goddamn game. Third step, put me in. The difference in playing in sports, guys, you got to wait on the coach to put you in. You got to wait on the coach to tap you on the shoulder. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you decide when you get in. You decide when you get in. I'm jumping in. I'm doing a third step. I want something to be different in my life. I want to be different. If you want something to be different in your life, the only thing you got control over is I want to be different. When I get different in my life, my whole life will get different. And this ego-reducing series of exercises, so I get into this third step experience. And why? So this deal about the third step, and I talk about it, and like I said before, for me, it's not a quest to find out what God's will is for me. It's for Ralph to give up on his will for himself. Stop living my life, run on my will. You know, that self-will run riot. And there's a trap door when Bill says that, you know, because most people will be sitting up at, nah, I ain't self-will run riot. Hell no, I don't know why you say that about me. And his next sentence is, though he usually doesn't think so. Damn, caught me, you know. So the minute you say I ain't, you are. So that third step, for me, you hear people say, I turned it over and I've taken it back and I've turned it over and I've taken it back, and I'm not going to go there because we're going to do that in the next step. But that's something I've stood on for my entire 32 plus years in recovery. It's my foundation. God is big enough for me to rail. God is big enough for me to feel like, you know, I throw tantrums. God is big enough. Sometimes I look at it like that third step is a real broad room. It's like a broad, it's my house. It's my house. But I still have my, sometimes you got Ralph's room in the house, and I run in my room. Come that decision. I've never wavered on that decision in these in all these years. I was and there are milestones. Sometimes you look at your life and you look at recovery. Mark the spot sometimes when there are things that indicate to you that, damn, I really have made that decision and stood on it. When I was 7 years sober, I was in Palm Springs, 2 hours out of L.A. I was working for a law firm. Close as I've come to drinking, in my at that time I was 7 years. In my 32 years, I've not been thirsty. But I came close one time, and I wasn't thirsty. Interesting. I was in a hotel room in Palm Springs, working for a law firm, and we had a trial out of town. And we won the case, first day of trial. The other side brought a motion they shouldn't have brought, crazy motion. Our client was the Walt Disney Company, big client. And we won on the first day of trial. And so we were in the hotel afterwards, seven people standing around. The counsel from Disney, one of the partners from Disney, two partners from my firm, associate from my firm, paralegal from Disney, paralegal me, low man on the totem pole. And I'm standing around in this circle, and the counsel from Disney pulled out a bottle of Dom Perignon, and he said, let's toast the victory. And I'm 7 years sober, and I'm in a small circle, and I don't want to drink. Slogans don't keep me sober. When I first started getting into this thing, I used to make light of the slogans, though. I used to be one of these guys that when you newly discovered a book, oh, it just got discovered by me, and the old timers been doing it wrong, and they don't know, and they used to say, I don't drink no matter what, and I used to say, I do drink no matter what. I didn't understand, that's not my program of recovery, but as a result of having a program of recovery, it's my anthem. Because I want to let you guys know, when I was standing in that circle and Ed Nowak was pouring that Dom Perignon, the only thing running through my head was, I don't drink no matter what, I don't drink no matter what, I don't drink no matter what. It's running through my head, and a lot of other thoughts are racing at the same. He's going around the circle, dude. And I'm standing there and I'm thinking, I don't drink no matter what. But I'm also thinking, oh, but I'm going to look bad. What are they going to think about me? I'm going to embarrass my firm. I'm going to embarrass the people around me. If I don't at least take a sip, they're going to know there's something wrong with me. What are they going to think about me? Because I'm dominated by what I think you think about me, right? That's the dominating fear in my life still. And so, and I'm standing there. And this decision, this turning myself in, followed up by what you got to follow it up for the decision to take hold. And so obviously I'm talking about a whole series of things, resting on that decision, you know. And I don't know what gave me just enough to walk out the circle. I don't know which sponsee call gave me just enough, which H&I panel, with Fifth Step I shared, I don't know what gave me just enough. I had just enough to say, hold on. And I walked out of the circle, and I went to the sink in the room, and I put water in my glass, and I came back to the circle. And we clinked, and we toasted. And I want to let you know something else, especially when you're new. You might think doing the right thing feels right all the time. It didn't feel right for the first 30 seconds. It felt extremely uncomfortable. I felt extremely judged. I felt like, damn, I wonder what they think. And I was uncomfortable for about a minute and 30 seconds. But that was when I was 7 years sober. And I've been extremely comfortable with that decision for the last, oh, I'd say 26 years. You know, so it was worth that 1 minute and 30 seconds of uncomfortability standing on the third. And I marked that spot. I marked that spot. You know, that third step decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of this power that has done for me what I can't do for myself. And when you turn your will and your life over to the care of this power, God don't want to know, take care of, it's very important for me. I'm not good with money. I'm not that good with money. So Charlie, okay, Charlie's good with money. Charlie, I'm gonna turn my money over. I'm gonna give my money over to the care of Charlie, and I'm gonna say, Charlie, I hear you got a good investor. Invest my money for me. Grow my money for me. Now, when I give that money to Charlie to grow it for me, whose money is it? Whose money is it? See, that's whoever said that, that's why I'm not giving you my money to invest. His ass said, it's Charlie's money. No, Charlie's the investor. He's E.F. Hutton. See, Charlie is it's my money. Charlie is in Charlie's care. And Charlie's going to grow my money for me. It's my life. It's my life. Again, this is Ralph White's opinion of how it is I see my relationship with this power. It's my life. Sometimes I see God is looking back. I wonder what my boy going to do this time. I don't see God as a puppeteer. I don't see God as the guy behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. You know, I mean, there's a line in one of Steinbeck's plays, and they had a long discussion about the nature of man and the nature of man and God, the rest of this. And there's a line in there, and he says, thou mayest. And what that means is God has given me free will. He separated me from animals and the rest of the creatures on this planet. And he says, Ralph White, you get to be Ralph White. I've given you something I didn't even reserve for myself. An old timer told me that a long time ago. I said, what is that? And he said, God gave you the choice of whether or not you're going to return his love. God don't have no choice. He got to love you because God is love. Gave you the choice of whether you're going to volunteer. So that free will, that's why we talk about self-will, God's will, that free will. God is still in. So when I go to the third step, I don't see myself coming out on the other end as the puppet. I don't see myself coming in as God pulling the string. No, I see myself coming out on the other end as God is going to make Ralph White the best me I'm going to ever be. So when I go into this exercise, ladies and gentlemen, the reason I go into it and the reason I encourage anybody else in here to get on your knees and go into it is not because we're going to talk about it sitting up here at the retreat this weekend. I'm going to come out on the other end and I'm going to be that mother I wanted to be. He's made me a father. I'm not a rock. But I got two little girls, these young ladies right now. And I don't know why, but if you talk to them, they see something I wasn't expecting when I came to you. He's done something with me. I got on my knees and I turned myself in, and they see a rock. There's an 89-year-old lady in Los Angeles who had six boys that damn near killed her. And that 89-year-old lady, it's me and her. I never thought I could come in here and make that right for her. It's me and her. What kind of transformational power is that? So I rushed the third step. Not because I get to come in here and tell you guys about it. But I marvel every time I got them grandsons and they see granddaddy. I didn't know that's what I was coming in here for when I got on my knees back in 1987. I didn't know I'd be granddad. I know I'd be daddy like this. I know I'd be the son of my mom. Real stuff with real people. That's what we do. Charlie, take it.
Thank you, Ralph. Mm-hmm. That was good.
Check, 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 check. All right.
Okay.
I'm Charlie, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, that was good stuff. You know, we got a lot of ground to cover in this step, and I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience, but it's going to be pretty technical, because one of the things we talk about is, you know, when Ralph talked about how many of us have been to AA before, and one of the things me and Danny talk about a lot of times is when you meet people in AA, we have our sobriety date, and then we have our been around date. And how long have you been sober? They go, well, I've been sober for 21 days, but I've been around since 1996, you know. So so we always got to give that been around date because the reason I bring that up is not to make fun of you know, because I relapsed, you know, three times. But my message a lot of times has changed in this third step, and it's what I like to talk about. But when you got somebody coming back in, and you got, or there's two groups of people I seem to work with a lot. It's either people that have been, they'll say, I had 18 years and I blew my knee out. I had 21 years and I couldn't sleep and they gave me this. I had 7 years and I got a root canal and you know, something happened. And we talked last night about that, and we talked this morning. I was sitting there at the table downstairs talking about this terrible cycle we catch ourselves in where I drink until I have to stop, and I stop until I have to drink, and then I drink until I have to stop, and I stop until I have to drink. And I don't see that until you break that down for me, because but that's that hopeless state of mind and body I find myself in when I come in here, is that I get so uncomfortable sober that I'm going to drink again. And then after I drink for a while, I got to stop, or I get stopped, and we go. So, but then, so when, but if I stay sober and I don't get engaged in this process the way I see, and I tell guys at the treatment center sometimes, I go out, I'm in the construction business, I'm not in the treatment business, but I go out to this treatment center, and I tell these guys, if you get out of here and you don't do the stuff we're talking about, and you get so uncomfortable that you drink again, don't say AA didn't work, because you're living the promises. That is exactly what the book promises me that I will do in a period of sobriety, is I'll get so uncomfortable that I'm going to drink again. And so when that guy comes back in, either when I meet somebody that relapsed with time, or I meet somebody that says I had 16 years and I relapsed, that guy's thinking, what do you got for me that's different from what I heard the last 18 times I've been in AA? I've been in and out of AA for 18 years, and I don't see what's different. And where it's really powerful is when it's somebody that's sitting in the rooms. You know, this untreated alcoholism package we were at a conference one time, and Katie was speaking, and the guy that was the MC of the conference came up to me, and he said, can we talk? And I said, yeah. And we go over, and I said, what's up? And he goes, I'm 16 years sober. I said, okay. And Katie had talked a lot about untreated alcoholism. He goes, I'm not thinking about drinking, but I can't shake this thought of killing myself. And I said, we should go sit down, you know. And I went through the steps backwards with him. I do that a lot when I meet somebody that's struggling, you know, and where we start at 12. How many, are you sponsoring anybody? How's your prayer and meditation? Where were you in the amends process? When was the last time you wrote inventory? And what do pages 60 to 63 mean to you? And by the time it gets back, I go, oh, this is good news, brother. I said, you know, because if you were doing all that stuff and thinking about offing yourself, I'd have to get really creative, you know. I mean, I might have to try that whole acceptance thing or something, you know. But I was like, you just got untreated alcoholism, you know, because you're not doing any stuff. But so when we talk about what do you got to offer me that's different, because it feels like I mean it when I come in, and then when I drink, it seems like a good idea, you know, and it's been going on for a long time. And so what changed for me at 17 years sober, I didn't have time to talk about a lot of the stuff in my life in sobriety, and this plane crash I was in, and having a new life. You know, we crashed in the water at night out on Long Island, and I was on CNN with Anderson Cooper and all that stuff. But that was just the tail end of this period of untreated alcoholism that I'd been in for several years in recovery, because I had blown up a marriage at 4.5 years. That's when I met Bob. I called Bob going through my first divorce, and he really changed me. He was the first guy I heard him speak at the Lone Star Roundup in Dallas. 3,500 people in the room, and it felt like me and him were the only two people in that room. You know, it was the first guy. Because I was sitting there in trouble, you know, and it's the first guy I'd ever heard that was talking about having significant problems in sobriety. It seemed like everybody I'd heard up to that point had said, then, you know, my life was a wreck, and then I came through those doors, you know. you know, and it's been nothing but rainbows and butterflies ever since then, you know. And I'm sitting there, I can't figure out why my marriages are blowing up, and I'm overdrawn at the bank, and you know, and I annoy people, and, you know, so, but then it happened again at 7 years. And now there's another child support check going out the door. And so I pulled away for about 10 years. And I remember thinking, you know what, I've tried it your way. I'm getting knocked to the mat. Every time I step into the ring, I'll show you what half measures will get me. And I pulled back a little bit. I pulled back on my rigorous honesty a little bit. I pulled a lot, you know. you know, I was still very much about not drinking. I was very much an AA member, but I was doing a little casual wire fraud here and there. And you know, and there were things, you know, as a contractor, if they said, you know, we're going to need a certificate of insurance, you know, I'd be like, I'm going to get you a certificate of insurance. You know, I would appreciate it if you don't call the company whose name is on it. But, you know, and that's what I mean. But, I mean, in little things like that. And then I got in this dishonest marriage, and then that blew up in that plane crash. And I come back in this deal. And what I didn't realize is that for the first 17 years of my sobriety, I'd been working a program like the problem was alcohol. And if you don't drink, you get an A, you know. And I was that guy, you know, the guy in the meetings that's going, you know, I screamed at my wife this morning. I slapped one of the kids. I burned out of the driveway. I got to work an hour late. I looked at 2 hours of internet pornography at the office, and then I went to lunch. So I came back and gambled on the internet for a little while, and I left work an hour early, and I got a half gallon of vanilla ice cream and ate it in the front seat of the car without a spoon. But I didn't drink today, and by God, that makes me a winner, you know. And you're like, well, that makes you something, you know. But I'm not sure winner is the first noun we would have gone to, you know. But I didn't know that. I mean, I was in my life was a lot better not drinking, you know. Because, you know, I mean, good things happen when we're not drinking. But I'm hitting the wall. I'm hitting the wall. And if I see a mistake being made in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the biggest mistake, assuming there are any mistakes being made, the biggest mistake I see being made is the thing that happened to me, and that was where we came in and we said, are you alcoholic? And they said, yeah. And we tend to rush people in the door. We don't want to spend any time qualifying. You know, are you alcoholic? And I said, well, yes. And they go, do you believe that there could be a power that could take you beyond where you are today? We struggled with that one for a while. But then I said, okay, all right. And then we went right from that decision to the third step prayer. And I see it happening over and over and over again in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how I wound up working a program like The Problem Was Alcohol. And that's how I wound up for 17 years not knowing what the problem really is. And I used to feel bad about talking about it till I realized how much company I have. You know, I mean, because I would go, I was in Arkansas one time, and this guy runs up to me at breakfast the next morning. He goes, remember yesterday when you said the big book takes a right turn on page 60 and you missed it for 17 years? I said, oh, yeah. And he goes, I missed it for 23 years. I said, what do you mean? And he goes, I had to go back to my room last night and get my big book and see if it really said the stuff that you were saying, because I had never heard it in my life. The entire time I've been sober, I never heard the stuff you're saying. In fact, I had to go verify that it was really in the book. You know, and so the book takes a right turn on page 60, and I missed it for 17 years. If you go to page 60, I got a lot of ground, but Ralph set this up really good. After that A, B, and C, I call this how it works, the first couple of pages of how it works, the most often read, least listened to portion of the big book. You know, it's the closest a lot of our fellowship ever gets to meditation. Is we drift off about the time they go, rarely have we seen a person fail, you know. And then we come back into the room by the time they go, B, that probably no human power could. And I think that's why we chant at the end of the, you know, see that God could and would if he were so. It wakes everybody up, you know. And they go, oh, okay, we're back in the room now. You know, I mean, because, and that whole chanting thing, I mean, it's weird when they just start doing stuff that they didn't do when you came in. You know, when I came in, they'd hold hands and they'd say, keep coming back. at the end of the prayer, you go, okay, well, I guess we say, keep coming back. You know, and then it was, keep coming back, it works. And then it was, keep coming back, it works. If you work it and you're worth it, so work it. And you're like, oh, for God's sake. You know, I always picture this new guy going, you know, I really want to stop drinking whiskey, but do I really have to do this whole shave and a haircut, two bits, you know? I'm just saying you don't have to do it. I don't want to get off on a big soapbox on that, but you don't have to do it. Turns out, amen is a kick-ass way to end a prayer. You know, I mean, we're the only group of people that try to put a better ending on the Lord's Prayer than, say, Jesus did. You know, it's a, I think we can put a little flavor on this, But it says, being convinced, we're at step three. This is about the third new paragraph on page 60. Being convinced of what? A, B, and C. If A, B, and C, being convinced of those, puts me at step three, then A, B, and C must do a pretty good job of summing up one and two. And it says, A, that I'm alcoholic and can't manage my own life. Now we know what that means. We've just spent the doctor's opinion in the first 59 pages talking about what it means. I'm alcoholic now, and I can't manage my own life. B, that probably no human power is going to relieve it. My sponsor, my counselor, my probation officer, my best friend, ain't nobody going to fix it, especially me. You know, it's not going to be able to fix it. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. So it says, being convinced of those, I'm at step three. We talked about this morning. I had a great conversation sitting out there this morning. And it says, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood it. And what's your name? Yeah. Jen said, I don't exactly know what that means. You know. And I said, neither did I. And that's why it says, we talked about turning statements into questions in the book. Sometimes I like to look at what are fair questions. It would be a fair question for her to say, if I say, okay, Jim, we're going to want you to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. It would be a fair question for her to go, okay, all right, I'm down, but what do you mean and what do you want me to do? I don't get it. You know, I'm sitting here going, I don't, you know, what do you want? And it goes, well, turns out there's a requirement for step three, because we're going to spend the next two pages talking about what we mean, and then it's going to shift over to what we do. And it is the pivot point of the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I missed it for a long time. I compare it to the route map of a major airline. You know how if you look at Delta Airlines' route map, they got hubs. You know, they got Atlanta, and all through there are these lines that draw back to that hub city. Well, everything in the book draws back to this. It keeps coming back to this deal we're going to make in step three, and all the time. And the first requirement, it says, is that I be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I remember seeing that line. I'm sitting there 17 years sober, and that line goes whoop, up off the page like that, and I'm like, when did they put that in there? I mean, because not only was I not convinced that my life run on self-will could hardly be a success, that line had never touched me because, looking back on it now, it was because we went right from, are you willing to believe, to the third step prayer. And if you do that, you skip this body of work from pages 60 to 63. It's really not very important. It's just the root of my problem and the basis of my recovery for the rest of my life. You know, other than that, just skip it, you know. And so I spent a lot of time talking about this. And it says, you remember we talked last night about basis? It says, on the basis of self-will, when me running this deal is the underlying foundation of my life, the principle rule of my life is, the fundamental principle is that I got this. It says I'm almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. So now I don't even understand. Now you're talking about my motives. And the thing I see with me at 34 years of sobriety is I still want to talk about my motives. When I work with a lot of men, and a lot of men, we always want to talk about our motives. You know, so Katie will say, you know, you really hurt my feelings, you know, when you said, I go, but I didn't mean to, honey. And she's like, look in here. Look right in here. You see anybody that gives a shit what you were trying to do? You know, I mean, I'm telling you, you hurt my feelings. And I'm like, but I didn't mean to, right? It seems like I ought to get a pass if I didn't mean to, right? Am I the only one? Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, so I'm always wanting to go back to my motives. I didn't mean to. I wasn't trying to. Here's what I was trying to, you know, and it talks about that right here. It says, even though my motives are good, and it says, I'm like this actor. I didn't understand that actor. Am I the only one that read the book and this actor, you're like, what? I got nothing. Well, the thing I didn't understand for a long time is that the reason that actor is such a problem is because he's not the director. He's just an actor. He's supposed to stand on that X and say his little line. You know, when Julia Roberts comes in, you get the tray of water and you say, would you like something to drink? That's your line. Except when they start, I'm like, whoa, cut. I don't like this whole deal. There's too much light coming in that window. I don't like the dress that Julia Roberts is wearing. You know, I don't even like the name of the movie. And then really, when she comes over here, we don't even need George Clooney. I'll take his lines, you know. You just, that's all me everywhere I go my whole life. I said last night that I like to form a strong opinion based on a limited perspective. And I do it everywhere I go. You know, why do they put the bean dip over here when the potato chips are way over there? I mean, why, you know, I got an opinion on everything, you know. You know, I mean, you know, you see us in the world and we think we blend in, but you can, I mean, Ray Charles could spot us, you know. I mean, for some of you young ones, Ray Charles was a blind artist from that, yeah. But I mean, you know, like, because like you look at the post office, you know what some people do when there's a long line? You know what some of them do? They just stand in line. I know. I mean, we're the ones in line going, could we get some help on our, we got five checkout lanes, you got one checker up here, you know, and I got an opinion on everything, you know, and it says, on that basis, I'm always in collision, and it says, and here's this delusion of self-will, but last word on page 60, going over to 61, it says, if only my arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as I wish, you know, everything would be great. God dang it. I mean, I'm trying to create Charlie-topia, but it ain't that selfish because you're all invited. It's going to be great for everybody, you know. So whenever I get stuff, so everything I do is guided by this my motives, which seem good. And I've also got this delusion that, yeah, I know it's bad right now, but if, you know, if everybody just done right, everything would have been fine. I was trying, and so I don't ever, the problem is I got this funnel that I run all my actions through. And one side of that funnel is made up of my motives, right, which are good. I wasn't trying to hurt anybody. And then I got this delusion that if everybody had done right, everything would have been great. So when I run my actions through that funnel, when they come out the bottom, about the worst I'm ever going to give myself is about a B+, right? Now the problem is what we're going to find out later is that when you foul up, I don't run your actions through the funnel. It's an outrage and I demand justice because I don't care what's driving you or what your motives were or what you thought, how you thought things were going to go. And this is my whole life now. You know, and I missed it for so long. And then here comes what we call the toolkit of self-will. It says, in trying to make these arrangements, our actor is sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, modest, generous, self-sacrificing, right? Unless what? When would I not be those qualities? I'm the nice guy unless I'm not getting my way, right? And it says, on the other hand, I might be mean, egotistical. So what happens is, the thing is, like, I might be able to yell at this guy and get him to do what I want, right? This guy I can dominate, I can bully him a little bit, and he'll do what I want. But now Ralph won't take that. Ralph will bow up if I try to yell at him. So what's Ralph going to get? Ralph's going to get, God dang, Ralph, you're the one guy that understands what we're trying to do here. You know, I mean, I wish I had more friends like you. If I had more people like you in my life, we could listen. You know, and anybody can see what I'm trying to do, you know. But I always picture this halfback in the open field Chukin, you know, I'm kind over here. And it's kind of like fencing. You know, in fencing, they parry and thrust. They parry and thrust. So you look for what's going to work, and then you go in, you know. And so it's like, if I can be kind over here, we're going to go in with that one. But if he, whoa, you know. I always say bullies always got one foot on the brake, you know. I mean, you know, it's like I'll try to bully, but then if you go, oh, no, I wasn't trying to say that, you know. And then you got to go over to kind, modest, and self-sacrificing, you know. But it's all me trying to arrange things to go my way, which would be fine if it worked out real good. But it's just what usually happens. The show doesn't come off very well. I missed this stuff for so long, and now I think my sponsees are going, oh, no. I got a sponsor that's only read 3 pages out of the big book, you know, because we live right here. We live, and most of my 10th step calls could start off with me going, hey, Chris, let me guess, the show didn't come off very well. And, well, no, it didn't, and I just killed the clock. It's still going. So it says, but what do I do? It says, he decides, do I go, oh, self-will ain't working? No. It says, when I blew up that marriage at 4.5 years sober, I pulled back and I waited the appropriate amount of time to get into another relationship, right? 16 days. And I run into another one, you know? And then at 7 years, I've blown that one up. And I can't figure out what's happening, because this is not the way I want my... I grew up with good Christian values, and you only get married one time, and they are blowing up in my face, and I don't understand. This is not the way I wanted my life to go, and I can't do anything about it. But the problem is, it says, he decides on the next occasion to be more demanding or more gracious. Still, things don't go right. Let's see if this sounds familiar. Admitting I might be somewhat at fault, right? You know, if there's a term I could get taken out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it would be the term my part. But it's not in our book. It's in our fellowship. And people say, well, I've tried to look at my part. I go, dude, we are not qualified to define the parts. You know, because if you let me pick the parts, this is going to be the argument I'm having with Katie. Well, there's my part. That's it. It's right there, you know. And I think if I apologize for my part, that'll make it easier for her to come with her part, you know. And it doesn't seem like delusion. It seems like the truth. But it says, I'm sure other people are more to blame. I become angry, indignant, self-pitying. And this ain't like angry this week, indignant. It's like boom, boom, boom. I can't believe this. They're doing it. This to me, indignant. After everything I've tried to do for these knuckleheads, this is what they're going to do? You know, and then the last piece is self-pity. You know, what's the use? I'm surrounded by idiots. I can't work, you know. I can't work with this crew. And it's boom, 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 and it happens over and over and over again. And it says, what is his basic trouble? There's that word basis again. What is his basic trouble? Not the little limbs of my problems. Now we're getting down to the root of my problem. And it says, is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to count? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? I'm sitting there at 17 years sober, and I am, or last week, sitting there trying to manage my butt off, and I can't get things to go right. You know, and the problem is I didn't have anybody in my life when I was blowing up those marriages and I was pulling back. I didn't have anybody in my life saying, Charlie, you're not running up against the failure. You remember I said I pulled away from AA a little bit? I didn't have anybody saying, Charlie, you're not running up against the failure of AA. You're running up against the failure of self-will. This is what happens when you try to manage the show yourself sober, right? This, we call it the second surrender. The second surrender, the first surrender is what Ralph was talking, you know, we were talking about last night, and it's pretty easy. You know, it's easy, the surrender to alcohol and whatever else came crashing me through here, it's easy to surrender when a gorilla has his foot on your throat, right? But the second surrender usually comes after I've been sober and trying to manage this deal sober for a while, and I can't figure out why it ain't going right, right? And, you know, and why did I have these thoughts? Why do I feel like kicking the cat? Why do I, and stuff like that, you know? And I always say, if you don't think you have any of those crazy thoughts, how'd you like to have a loudspeaker hooked up to your brain that just broadcasts your thoughts as you're moving through the world today? Does that send shivers up your spine? I mean, you know, if people heard what goes on up in here, I'd be in a padded room, you know. But it goes on to say, in an evidence to the rest of the people in this place, when I'm trying to hog the spotlight, and then what's they going to do? They're all going to try to hog the spotlight too. Now we got chaos on the set, you know. And it says, our actor is self-centered, egocentric. And he gets over it. Now remember, we're still talking about what we mean here when we're talking. We're still in the what we mean part. And it says, it talks about people that think life is treating them wrong, but it says selfishness, self-centeredness. That, now remember who we is? We was the founders talking to me. These are people on the other side. And they're saying that we think is the root of our trouble. Huh. Selfishness, self-centeredness. See this right turn that the book takes right here? All of a sudden, we ain't talking about vodka anymore. And it says, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. When I'm driven by these things, I ain't choosing to act that way. When you're driven by fear, when you're driven by self-seeking, driven by delusion, you know, and I mean, you know, you ever done that rapid dial thing or those 45 texts or have you ever taken that drive by her house just after, right after you break up, you know, just to see what's happening, you know, am I the only one? I mean, I tell a story about when I broke up with wife number two. And I went driving by her new apartment just to see, you know, just see what's happening, you know. And I had some suspicion that there were extra players on the field, you know. And so I wander around back, and I'm going, but she's got a second story apartment, so I can't see in the patio door, but I need to. And before I know it, I am up in a tree, and I'm looking in the patio door, and sure enough, there's extra players on the field. And so she comes out on the balcony to smoke a cigarette. Now, it's wintertime. There's no leaves on the tree. And I'm about from here to that window from where she's standing, and I remember standing there, and I'm wearing blue jeans and a white T-shirt. And I remember thinking, how did this happen? You know, because I didn't choose to climb up in that tree. I was driven up into that tree. You understand what I'm talking about now? When we talk about being driven by 100 forms of fear, you know, I'm not choosing to act that way. And it says we step on people's toes and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me, seemingly without provocation, but, you know, like, right, I didn't do nothing, and they just went off on me. But it says invariably we find that we've made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be harmed. Seems like it's talking about self a lot, and I missed it for a long, long time. I'm going to try to hurry through this because we get down here, and here's one of the biggest promises in the big book. It says, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Now, why would that be a promise? Because if my troubles are of y'all's making, the only way I'm ever going to be okay is if I can get all y'all to act right. And I have very little experience getting everybody to act right. But if my troubles are of my making, me and this process and this power have a chance of seeing things differently and having things go differently and that sort of thing. But, one of the biggest movements I can get in a sponsee is to move him from my problems are coming at me to my problems are coming from me. I live my whole life thinking if I can just get everything out here arranged, then I'll be okay in here. But it turns out that my outward circumstances are always a demonstration of my inward condition. But I want to do the work out here, then I'll be okay in here. Turns out if I get okay in here, everything out here works out. And it says, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. I love this line. It's Ralph said it. Above everything, well, before we get to that line, I want to talk about it. It says, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. And Mark Houston was the one that looked at me and he goes, Charlie, what do the words above everything mean to you? And I'm like, well, a paramount importance, I guess. He goes, isn't it interesting that it doesn't say above everything, we got to stop drinking vodka? It turns out vodka never was my problem. It turns out that vodka was the only thing I had ever found that would ease the discomfort of a life based on selfishness and self-centeredness. So in this selfish place, I'm going to roll for a little while sober, and then I'm going to get so uncomfortable that I'm going to have to drink again. And the problem never was vodka. It was the self-centeredness, the selfishness, the way I show up, and the way people experience me. What's it like to be Charlie's employee, his wife, his child, his coworker? What? How do I show up? How do people experience me? And I promise you, it's different than I think it is. You know, and it goes on to say, I love that line Ralph said about the extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. I do a little graphic where if this board right here was the entire population of the United States, right? You with me? This is everybody in the country. Now we're going to go right over here and we're going to build a little, about a 25-foot high chain link fence with razor ribbon and barbed wire and guard towers. We're going to go out here into the population. We're going to get everybody that is self-will run riot. Right? Not just a little selfish, self-will run riot. You know, 17-year-old boys are going right into the fence. You know, I mean, you know, and all this. So you got an idea of the kind of people that are inside the fence now? Now we're going to go inside the fence into that community, and we're going to pluck out the extreme examples. These are the ones that are driving the other self-will run riot people nuts. You know, the ones where they're going, this brother here is killing me, and so we're going to pluck out all the extreme examples from the self-will run riot people. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the problem is, I don't even think I belong in the fence, right? Because I got a story that goes with it. When you come to pluck me out, I think, oh, see, now you heard my story and you understand. It looked selfish for a minute, but now if you let me hear the story. I had a sponsor the other day, gave me the whole story, and I went right into selfishness and self-centeredness, and he's really funny. He goes, okay, I'm going to tell this story one more time. And he says, and I need you to pay attention because this is really simple. You know? I'm blinded by my motives and this delusion. And so we're going to talk so much about how this shows up, but I want to put a bow on this at the end. It says, and now remember when we were sitting out there, where did Libby go? Oh, she's going to hear from me. Remember when we talked about over and over in the book, it brings you to a place where it says, here's the situation. Do you admit that it's objectionable? And then it goes, oh, by the way, you can't do a darn thing about it on your own part. It happens with alcohol. It happens here. It happens in 6 and 7. We're over. And it says, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of it. Now we're bringing God into this thing. It's because why do we want? It says we must or it kills us. God makes it possible. There often seems no way of getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we couldn't live up to them. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying our own power. Remember when I said, what do we mean by that and what do we do? That's the end of what we mean. We've been talking about what we mean from 60 over to the bottom of 62 here, and then it switches over to what we do. I'm going to make this real fast. It says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Now, why would I quit playing God? That's right. The next three words. If it's working out real good. And how do I play God? Is I know how everything ought to go. Right? I know where the potato chips ought to be. I know how many checkers there ought to be. I know whether somebody should be dead or alive. You know? When Mark Houston died, I could promise you that wasn't supposed to happen. 63 years old, he dropped dead one Friday afternoon. He sat at my Thursday night meeting at the house and said, I want to die like my heroes in AA. I want to be I get so jealous of people that can cry and talk at the same time. I'm either crying or talking, you know. So he said, I want to die like my heroes in AA. I want to be current in the steps. I want to be current in my amends. I want to be being sponsored. I want to be sponsored people. I don't think he meant tomorrow afternoon, but that's what happened. He died the next day, you know. But I knew that was an outrage because that's how I play God. I know how everything needs to go. And he goes into this deal here where it says, now we got this new deal. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God's going to be our director. So now our little play's got a director. And gives me three examples. It says, he's the principal, I'm his agent. He's the father, I'm his child. And it says most good ideas are simple. And this concept, what concept? The concept that I am no longer in management, right? You know, in the military, they say that's above my pay grade. There's a whole bunch of stuff, turns out, that's above my pay grade. And I am no longer running the show here. And it says, this was the keystone of the arts through which we, and it says, when we, now check this out. I just want to close with this. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, what position? The position that God's in charge, and that suits me just fine because I'm getting my brains beat out here, right? It says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts, now, at the bottom of 62 is what I call the deal. The deal is that I'm no longer in management. And you remember back on 46, it said, God doesn't make too hard of terms for those that seek him? Well, these are the terms. These are the terms in the deal I make with God right here. The deal is I'm going to quit playing God, and here's the terms of it. It says, we had a new employer, being all powerful. Now check out God's side of this deal. Being all powerful, he provides what I need under two conditions. If I stay close to him, and I perform his work well. So God will provide what I need if I stay close to him and perform his work well. And what I can tell you is the more all in I get on this deal, God does a kick-ass job of holding up his end of the bargain, right? But this thing, the terms of the deal, it turns out, and that's what Ralph was saying, there's nothing else. From here on out, there ain't nothing else but those two things. Everything we do from here on out is either about staying close to him or performing his work well. So when we get into this next phase, when we start looking at the inventory process, it turns out I can't stay close to this power unless I get close to this power. And I can't get close to this power when I'm blocked. So what we're going to look at in 4 through 9 is what's blocking me from this power. But I'm moved into this new deal here, and then comes the third step promises. I mean, I had this one sponsor that called me up one time. He goes, when does the selfishness stop? And I know it was 7 years ago because I said, brother, I don't know the answer to that question, but I know it's more than 27 years. I said, because it's still all over me. I mean, it's all over me, you know. And but it turns out the book never promised it that it's going to stop. It says we'll become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans. And I don't know why it's got to say my little plans. I got big stuff going on, you know. But then it says more and more I'll see what I can add to this thing. You know, so that's the deal. And then comes the third step prayer. Now look at what I missed going right from do you believe in God to the third step prayer. I missed this whole, so next thing you know, I'm writing inventory. I don't know what we're writing inventory. I do the third step prayer and it sounds like a bunch of churchy talk to me. You know, relieve me of the bondage of self. And now that's got some meat on the bone. When we talk about what the bondage of self really looks like. Take away my difficulties. Why? So I can have an easy go of it? No, the victory over them would show other people how, you know, you find yourself in a jackpot in sobriety and you get through it. Next thing you know, you find yourself sitting across from somebody that's got the exact same problem and you're saying, this is how I got through a divorce, sober, you know, and that sort of thing. You know, Bob Bazans told me, he goes, I want you to go through this divorce like there was a video camera on you that's going to be sent to the General Service Office as an example of how a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous goes through a divorce. I'm like, dang, Bob. Dang. Now when we do that third step prayer, it means something. Before we break, why don't we all just do it together? God, I offer myself to you. To build with me and to do with me as I will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them would bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I can't tell you how much. And now when I do a third step prayer with somebody, they do the third step prayer on their knees and I do a third step prayer on my knees. And I promise you, 90% of the time, I'm feeling it more than they are. You know, but I've seen guys that have been in and out of this program for 20 years, after you break this down to them and then do a third step prayer, they're like, wow, that was different. That was different. We're going to break now and then we're going to come back and talk about what we do next. Thanks, everybody.